Chapter 40. Rod's letter of appointment lay on his desk when he arrived at his office at 7:30 on the Monday morning. He sat down and lit a cigarette. Then he began to read it slowly, savouring each word. "Duly instructed by the Board of Directors," it began, and ended, "It remains only to tender the congratulations of the board and to voice their confidence in your ability." Dmitri came through from his office, distracted. "Hey, Rod! Christ, what a start to the week! We've got a fault in the main high-voltage cable on 90 level and..." "Don't come squealing to me," Rod cut him short. "I'm not the underground manager." Dmitri gaped at him, taken by surprise. "What the hell? Have they fired you?" "Next best thing," said Rod, and flipped the letter across the desk. "Look what the bastards have done to me." Dmitri read, and then whooped. "My God, Rod, my God!" He shot down the passage to carry the news to the other line managers. Then they were all in his office, shaking his hand. He judged most of their reactions as favourable, though occasionally he detected a false note. A twinge of envy here. One there, who had recently had his ears burned by the Ironside's tongue. And an incompetent who knew his job was now in danger. The phone rang. Rod answered it. His expression changed, and he cleared his office with a peremptory wave.
"Hirschfeld here."
"Morning, Mr. Hirschfeld."
"Well, you've got your chance, Ironsides."
"I'm grateful for it."
"I want to see you. I'll give you today to sort yourself out. Tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. My office at Reef Buildings."
"I'll be there."
"Good."
Rod hung up, and the day dissolved into a welter of activity and reorganization, constantly interrupted by a stream of well-wishers. He was still running the underground manager's job in addition to the general manager's. It would be some considerable time before a new underground manager was transferred in from one of the other group mines. He was trying to arrange his move to the big office in the main administrative block up on the ridge when he had another visitor, Frank Lammer's secretary, Miss Lily Jordan, in a severe grey flannel suit, looking like a wardress from Ravensbrook. "Mr. Ironsides, you and I have not seen eye to eye in the past." That was the understatement of the year. "It is unlikely that we will in the future. Therefore, I have come to tender my resignation. I have made arrangements." The phone rang. Dan Stander's voice, breezy and carefree. "Rod, I'm in love." "Oh, Christ, no," Rod groaned. "Not this morning." "I've got to thank you for introducing me to her. She's the most wonderful..."
"Yeah, yeah."
Rod cut him short. "Look, Dan, I'm rather busy. Some other time, all right?"
"Oh, yes, I forgot. You are the new general manager, they tell me."
"Congratulations. You can buy me a drink at the club. 6 o'clock.
"Right. By then I'll need one."
Rod hung up and faced the hanging judge expression of Miss Lily Jordan. "Miss Jordan, in the past, our interests have conflicted. In future, they will not. You are the best private secretary within 100 miles of the Sonder Ditch. I need you. The company needs you." That was the magic word. Miss Jordan had 25 years' service with the company. She wavered visibly. "Please, Miss Jordan, give me a chance." Shamelessly, Rod switched on his most engaging smile. Miss Jordan's femininity was not so completely atrophied that she could resist that smile. "Very well, then, Mr. Ironsides. I'll stay on initially until the end of the month. We'll see after that." She stood up. "Now, I'll get your things moved up to the new office.
Oh, thank you, Miss Jordan.
With relief, he let her take over and tackled the problems that were piling up on his desk. One man, two jobs. Now he was responsible for surface operation, as well as underground. The phone rang, men queued up in the passage, memos kept coming through from Dimitri's office. There was no lunch hour, and by the time she rang, he was exhausted. "Hello," she said. "Do I see you tonight?" Her voice was as refreshing as a wet cloth on the brow of a prize fighter between rounds. "Terry." He simply spoke her name in reply. "Yes or no? If it's no, I intend jumping off the roof of Reef Building."
"Yes," he said.
"Pops has summoned me to a meeting at 9 tomorrow morning, so I'll be staying overnight at the apartment. I'll call you as soon as I get in."
"Goody, goody," said she.
At 5:30, Dimitri stuck his head around the door. "I'm going down to number one shaft to supervise the chute, Rod." "My God, what time is it?" Rod checked his watch. "So late already."
"It gets late early around here," Dimitri agreed. "I'm off."
"Wait," Rod stopped him. "I'll shoot her."
"No trouble," Dimitri demurred.
Company standard procedure laid down that each day's blast must be supervised by either the underground manager or his assistant.
"I'll do it," Rod repeated.
Dimitri opened his mouth to protest further, and then he saw that expression on Rod's face and changed his mind quickly.
"Okay, then. See you tomorrow."
Rod grinned at his own sentimentality. The Sonder ditch was his now, and, by God, he was going to shoot his own first blast on her. They were waiting for him at the steel door of the blast control room at the shaft head. It was a small concrete room like a wartime pillbox, and there were only two keys to the door. Dimitri had one, Rod the other. The duty mine captain and the foreman electrician added their congratulations to the hundreds he had received during the day, and Rod opened the door, and they went into the tiny room.
"Check her out," Rod instructed, and the mine captain began his calls to the shaft overseers at both number one and number two for their confirmation that the workings of the Sonder ditch were deserted, that every human being who had gone down that morning had come out again this evening.
Meanwhile, the foreman electrician was busy at the electrical control board. He looked up at Rod.
"Ready to close the circuits, Mr. Ironsides."
"Go ahead," Rod nodded, and the man touched a switch. A green light showed up on the board.
"Number one, north long wall, closed and green."
"Lock her in," Rod instructed, and the electrician touched another switch.
"Number one, east long wall, closed and green."
"Lock her in." The green light showed that the firing circuit was intact. A red light would indicate a fault, and the faulty circuit would not be locked into the blast pattern. Circuit after circuit was readied until finally the foreman stood back from the control board.
"All green and locked in."
Rod glanced at the mine captain.
"All levels clear, Mr. Ironsides. She's ready to burn."
"Cheeser," said Rod, the traditional command that had come down from the days when each fuse had been individually licked by a handheld igniter stick. Cheeser was the Bantu word for burn. The mine captain crossed to the control board and opened the cage that guarded a large red button.
"Cheeser,"
echoed the mine captain, and hit the button with the heel of his hand. Immediately, the row of green lights on the control board were extinguished, and in their place showed a row of red lights. Every circuit had been broken by the explosions. The ground under their feet began to tremble. Throughout the workings, the shots were firing. In the stopes, the head charges fired at the top of the inclines. Then, in succession, the other shots went off behind them, each charge taking a 10-ton bite of rock and reef out of the face. At the end of the development drives, a more complicated pattern was shooting. First, a row of cutters went off down the middle of the oval face. Then the shoulder charges at the top corners, followed by the knee charges at the bottom corners. A moment's respite, with the dust and nitrous fumes swirling back down the drive. Then a roar as the easers on each side shaped the hole. Another respite, and then the lifters along the bottom picked up the heap of broken rock and threw it back from the face. Rod could imagine it clearly. Though no human eye had ever witnessed the blast, he knew exactly what was taking place down there. The last tremor died away. "That's it. A full blast," said the mine captain. "Thank you." Rod felt tired suddenly. He wanted that drink, even though their brief exchange that morning had warned him that Dan would probably be insufferable. He could guess the conversation would revolve around Dan's newfound love. Then he smiled as he thought about what waited for him in Johannesburg later that night. And suddenly, he wasn't all that tired.